Hello and welcome to the Road to the Trials podcast, where we take an insider's look into the training and racing of some of America's best runners as they prepare for the 2024 Olympic Trials. And we are back with our Boston recaps with Danny Moreno. Danny, thanks for hopping on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to, you know, articulate what happened out there and give the folks some insight.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate that. And we had a fun preview episode. That was really enjoyable. And I'm trying to remember, did I talk to you before or after Nico? Because I think you guys had very similar movie choices for the night before for potential movies. So, you know, I just want to start off with the most important question. What movie did you watch the night before the race?
I can't remember. I think I was watching The Night Agent on Netflix with my parents.
That was not one of the topics. Yeah, it was not one of the ones that you mentioned before.
Yeah.
What is The Night Agent?
It's this new show on Netflix that is basically kind of like CSI meets Bourne, you know, Ultimatum. And there's this agent in the White House and somebody wants to assassinate the president. And so all this, you know, everything that you would assume would happen in a show like that basically happens, but it's kind of like bingey.
Was it good?
It was really good. Yeah, I would definitely watch a season two, so highly recommend it.
Okay, all right. We're getting in on the ground floor. All right, so that's good to know. All right, so again, you did a really thorough preview episode, which I really appreciate. I don't want to like dive into any of that. We've already covered that. However, just picking up where we left off, you didn't have a lot of, if any, corporate responsibilities that weekend, even though you are an Adidas runner, you're Adidas Terex because you're on the trail side of things. So talk to me about how the night, you know, besides like your viewing choices, how the night before went in terms of, you know, being able to, I guess, how did the night before go for you? And how did that compare to nights before other big races that you've had?
Yeah, I pretty much just, you know, hung out. I had to go to this mandatory meeting that all the pro athletes had to go to the day before. And that was really cool. And we checked in our uniforms and our shoes. And that was actually probably one of my highlights of the weekend. Of many highlights is as a pro athlete in the field, when they check your shoes to make sure that it's the shoe that you then race in the next day. I don't know if they've always had this, but basically they like put a stamp on your shoe, which was pretty cool. So that definitely, I've never had anybody stamp my shoe before. So I just thought that was like a cool moment, you know, kind of encapsulating like, yeah, we're in the pro field, we're gonna do this. And being in that room with all those athletes, many of whom I have never met before, I've only watched on TV or seen articles about, and many of which I have a large due respect for. It was just really cool being in the same room as them as they explained kind of like what was going to happen the morning of the race, where to meet, all those details, etc. And that hotel, I think it's like the Sheraton or something like that, where a lot of the athletes stay. I didn't end up staying there. But it was just like really busy and lots of people there all the time. And it was very bustling. So it was just a cool place to be and, you know, to walk down the hallway and see, you know, that runner and this runner and the next runner. And you're like, whoa, you know, it's just a cool feeling. So I went from that and then immediately just went back to my Airbnb and just kind of hung out. Yeah.
So a lot has been made, and rightfully so, of what Chamonix is like during UTMB weekend, right?
Yeah.
That's like the central hub of the trail and ultra running world. Not to say that Boston is the equivalent, but I'd love to hear just like a compare and contrasting of the two, especially this year where Boston really was popping off, you know, like it was before COVID times, and just the weather was so nice for a lot of it too. It's just, how would you compare and contrast the two experiences?
I would say they're very similar. Yeah. As far as the energy downtown and stuff like that, it's a little bit easier to get to and from downtown Chamonix versus at least my experience just with having a rental car and trying to figure out public transportation, because in Chamonix they have a train literally like every 10 minutes that you can just like jump on and off from. And in Chamonix, I would say there was more visible activations. Like, I know there was a lot of stuff going on with Boston, but Chamonix, you just literally go to the downtown and every single brand has something going on, which is really cool. Whereas with Boston, it's sponsored by Adidas, which is awesome. But I didn't really see the other brand's presence as visible, but I knew there was, like pop-up shots that you would just have to go to those certain areas and kind of have those details beforehand. So I guess with Boston, for me, first time, I feel that as a spectator, you would need to already know where you were going, whereas Chamonix, you can literally just be passing through the country and you would see all these things for the race.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I was there on Friday, and yes, yeah, like if you didn't know where the pop-up shops were, I mean, you'd find them, right? If you're just like going up and down Newbury Street, you would end up finding them. But yeah, you definitely having that knowledge beforehand is nice. And most of the stuff was happening we're inside,
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
just like it's the cities I know. Not that I've ever been to Chamonix. Lord knows I've seen enough videos and pictures of it to last a lifetime at this point. But they definitely are just archaeologically different. In terms of if you're walking down the street knowing what's happening inside of a place versus like the outdoor scene or things like that. So no, that's interesting. Yeah, because there was just so much stuff going on, and then it was like for me I was like, this is so cool. And that was my first thought, was like, I got to talk to Danny about this experience, because it does seem like Chamonix is almost kind of like, to make another comparison, like Kona is for Ironman, where like it literally is like, well, Kona is part of an island, but like it's almost like a siloed island upon itself. Like nothing else is happening besides this race.
But it was cool. It was cool to see the parallel. It was just as exciting walking around as I was in Chamonix.
So before we start talking about the race, did you have a chance to connect with Nika Brinkman? You know, another big time trail runner as well who's in the field?
Yeah, we were kind of messaging the whole training block and then the week of the race. So we got to meet up and kind of chat with each other. We just actually interviewed her for our podcast, kind of just, going back and forth on our experience of, trail versus road and stuff like that. But yeah, I was just really grateful that she was there because she was the only other runner in the pro field I like know personally. And I find that when you have someone like that, you can be a lot more vulnerable with how you're feeling, and it's not to Yeah, whereas like you might not share with someone that you don't know that you're a little nervous or that, such and such is happening, and so you kind of like confide in each other. So we had a good conversation the day before the race, just, confiding in each other and pumping each other up for what was to come.
Yeah, in addition to her being one of the top trail runners in the world, she's also just one of the best marathoners in the world, which is such an interesting combination as a low 220s marathoner. So when you're talking to her as someone who's never run a marathon before, again, you've run that distance before, but you've never raced a road marathon before, what was it like in terms of like leaning on her either for a counsel or mentorship or just like her point of view?
That it's just a starting point, I feel like there's in a way like great is great, and there's tends to be in contradiction to that like a lot of emphasis and weight put onto debuts. And so just really, driving it home for me that this is a starting point. It is not end all. And she was expecting that I would catch the bug after the race regardless. But even for her, that was the biggest stage mar like stage of a marathon that she had ever run at also. And so for her it was a lot to just experience that atmosphere. And so it just kind of made me it reinforced the fact that it was a magical thing that I got to debut there. Like I already felt that and I kind of knew that, but hearing that from someone who was a national record holder being like, this is where you get to do your first marathon, it was really cool to share that excitement with her.
All right, let's talk about morning of. Specifically, when you're at the starting line, like where did you position yourself in the field, and how did you approach just your race day strategy?
Yeah, so I would say for me with the training block that I had, I kind of knew, I knew I was standing at the line not in my best shape ever. You just kind of know as a runner after having many of training blocks throughout your life, kind of where you are. But I felt that I had enough. Like I had enough of a block that I was giving myself a chance, to chase the qualifier. And for me, while it would have been enticing to view the race as I'm just going to race the field. I wanted to balance that with my realistic expectations of where I thought my fitness was. And so I put myself kind of at the back of the pack at the start line just to really allow myself to focus on my own race and my pacing. And as far as like the weather, we kept hearing there may or may not be a headwind the day before the race, you know, because the weather's just always changing. And so the morning of, as we're driving, it's now known there's going to be a headwind. So for with that too, I'm like, okay, well, ideally I'll find a pack that kind of is, you know, maybe not, it's not going to be the front pack. It's probably not going to be a second pack, but there's going to be a couple other packs that form, and hopefully I can jump in on one of those. But if I have to run by myself for a little bit, that's also okay. I'm used to running in the wind and the rain. So yeah, that's why I positioned myself in the back so I could kind of just like see the field unfold as quickly as possible. Look at my watch and I'll be like, okay, that's the group that I want to go with. But yeah, it was a crazy experience. Just, you know, being at that start line with all the people that were there and all the cameras and standing next to, you know, what felt like an Olympic race with how many world champions and Olympians there were in the race. So that was really cool. And yeah, the race went off, and it went off quite slow. Yeah, which
I was gonna ask you about that. Like, all right, before we get to the start of the race, again, you talked about like this for you, this was about potentially getting the qualifier. So did you have a certain time in mind? Obviously 2:37 is the qualifier, but at the same time, I've looked into like just your thoughts on like, all right, how much how much of a buffer were you kind of looking for and things like that, just in terms of getting the qualifier from a pacing perspective?
Yeah, it definitely changed, you know, like as the training block unfolded. Like when I first learned I got into Boston, immediately it was, okay, I'm going to get in the best shape of my life. I think I can run, or I believe I can run like 2:31 to 2:33. Like if I'm in the best shape ever, that's possible. And then I got sick a bunch and I was like, all right, this training block went from 12 weeks to 8 weeks. Let's see if we can do like 33 to 35. I think that's still possible. And then as things got a little bit closer, it's like, all right, let's aim for that like 35. And, you know, hopefully that's the buffer and we'll kind of just see how things unfold. But that pace didn't seem like scary to me, you know, and I felt that if I say 2:35 and the weather, you know, starts to kick in and it starts to wobble between 35 and 36, like that's still a pretty good place. So at the starting line, you know, the pacing I was looking at was like ranging from 5:45 to 5:55, depending, you know, if I was running by myself or, you know, just adjusting as the race went on.
Yeah. And of course, obviously, like it's not just one road necessarily. There are turns on the course, but it does seem like a nice part from a buffer perspective that you don't have to factor in like, all right, am I hitting the tangents kind of feel to it? Like, hey, there's 37 90 degree turns, right? And this could add like 0.3 to the mileage, which may not seem like a lot to certain people, but if you're trying to hit like a very challenging time, it could be the difference potentially.
Definitely. And as embarrassing as this is to say out loud, I was a little nervous that a couple days before the race, I was like, am I gonna take a wrong turn somewhere? Because in trail and mountain running, that's very, very common that you miss a turn. And then once the race started, I was like, there's no way I'm gonna take a wrong turn here. But that was something I was sincerely nervous about. I was like, okay, just
only
remember.
Rosie Ruiz has ever taken a wrong turn.
Okay, that's good to know.
Right? Yeah, hopped on the subway, got to mile 25, and then got back on the course. All right, well, let's talk about that first mile, right? I was just talking to Nell Rojas. She's like, first mile, 6:09.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, so there's all this buildup. You mentioned before, you're looking around, Olympian there, world champion there. Like, you're like, I'm gonna go to the back of the pack. I'm just gonna chill out. I wanna see how it unfolds. And all of a sudden, people are running their easy pace at the starting line. Maybe not like your easy pace, but like there's some people in the front who are like, this is my training pace. This is my easy pace today, and this is what we're going out at. So what was that like in terms of, you know, comparing it to what your expectation was for once the gun went off?
Yeah. I mean, we started and for me, I was like, this feels way too easy. And I was like, so if this feels easy for me, this probably feels like a freaking, like, people are sleeping out here to some of these women. But immediately as we hit that mile, I was like, okay, they're going to search really hard now because they aren't going to run six O's this entire race. And many of these women's PRs are sub 5:30 pace for the marathon. And almost immediately it was just like a big kick into gear, and you could just see the group starting to form. And I feel very fortunate and learned from experience in trail that, you know, you don't always need to go with the race. And I take pride in my ability to pace. And so I just looked at my wrist and I was like, all right, I'm staying, you know, just a little bit faster than this, but I'm not going to go with that group. There's no reason for me to start running 5:20s for a couple of miles just to, like, for my ego to be boosted that I'm hanging with people. So I immediately hung back, but a lot of the field went with that surge. And, you know, within the first, like, I think it was like 3 to 5 miles, like, I just saw them going, and, you know, I was totally fine with that. I knew what I needed to do that day, and what their probably goals were quite different. And what was cool is that, like, there's probably 6 women that held back with me, and then 2 that had, like, gone for a mile, and then they were like, what are, maybe this is a little too fast, and they kind of pieced off. And so I started to become part of a group of, I think there was like 6 of us that started to form together, which was nice.
Now, did you know any of them ahead of time?
No, not at all. And it was really cool because I started looking at my watch, and I think immediately we were kind of at 5:45s, which I was like, all right, this money, this is what I need. And I was actually the first one to speak up in the group. I was like, is this the Pac-Man group? Kind of just like joking around, and got a couple chuckles. And then 2 of the girls, I think they're on the same team, they asked, oh, what pace are you going for? And I said, I'm going for 45:50. What about you guys? And they said same. And I was like, all right. And so then it was kind of like this consensus agreement that we were all going to work together. So that was pretty cool.
Gotcha. When you say
5:45, 5:50. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And you were nailing it. It seemed like you were pretty much on it. The splits and the trackers aren't perfect because, again, it doesn't factor in the tangents. But just looking at, like, the 5K splits, which I know are not perfect, but just they're a good guide. First 5K, 5:54 pace. Next one, 5:51. Third, 5:54. Fourth, 5:56. Right. And then at the half marathon, you were at 5:50 pace, right on the bunny, which is always kind of funny. You see the track, you're like, wait, how's the half marathon 5:50 when all of the markers ahead of it were slower than that? Anyway, it's like the joys of following a race on a tracker, I guess. So ultimately, a 77.07, so a 1:17 half. So you're running with this group, you're sticking together. When you come through the half marathon, 1:17.07, which is pretty close to what you had mentioned before about running a 2:35. First of all, how were you feeling at that point, and how did you view that time in relation to how you were feeling?
Yeah, so at that point, we had already dwindled down to like a group of 3 of us, of the 6 that started with us, a couple of women.
Did the other folks speed up, or did they slow down?
They fell off, yeah. I think 2 of them fell off around mile 8, and then another one fell off around like mile 10. So then it was down to 3, and yeah, it was kind of an interesting moment in the race that, you know, most of the downhill was done. So I was kind of like checking in with my quads and stuff like that. And I had like my right hamstring started cramping up a little bit, but it went away after I drank some water and stuff like that. But overall, I was feeling good, you know, all things considered. I was a little nervous about that just again because the training block was so kind of all over the place that I knew the half, checking in at that half marker was very important just to like see how I was feeling. And what was nice is that I'd been able to grab all my bottles up to that point too. So like
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I like felt pretty fueled and ready to go. And it was cool right after that, kind of going through the half marathon, like you said, with the markers, the couple of K's before that, like my watch, was clicking before we hit the marker, and I was like, dang, we're missing some
Nico
tangents
was the
here.
same exact way. He was describing he would
Really?
like it would click and then he would start counting in his head to the marker.
Yeah, exactly. But the half marathon was like pretty spot on. Like it was closer than the other ones, and I was like, okay, were those other ones just off? I was trying not to think about it, but to your point, like there was so much that I was just learning during the race itself because this is my first one. And so to your point of the tangent and stuff like that, I was like, okay, I need to be thinking as I start approaching the 25K and the 30K, like how many seconds is this off because I'm going for that 2:37 mark. But after the half marathon, there was like a couple of very gradual hills, and I felt like a second wind come in where I was like, all right, like I'm feeling good. I can do this.
That's your world.
Yeah, that's my
Go. Yeah.
world. And the roads were a lot more wet than I was expecting too. But I thought that was pretty cool. So just like running through the puddles and everything, and working together with those two women as we started to approach what I knew was then going to be like the crux of the course.
Yeah, so did you plan on having it being like a bit of a positive split, considering that, like, again, the first half is a pretty, not extreme, but a significant net downhill.
Yeah.
So like I would assume that you'd probably plan for somewhat of a positive split if you're especially running on effort.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was thinking, like best day ever, it's probably 70 seconds, but most likely probably like 90 seconds. And again, like I just had, confidence from the trails that, I could hold on that second half.
All right, let's talk about the Newton Hills and then Heartbreak. You mentioned a second ago, like once you started seeing the road, start to turn upward a little bit, you started feeling like home and this is your thing. So talk to me about how those hills, not only how you felt on them, but I know you didn't do race prep on the course. So like how did you, as you were negotiating them and going up them, how did they align with your preparation and the people you would talk to and what you were expecting?
Yeah, so like something did end up happening right before Newton Hill. So I had, like I said, I'd gotten every single bottle. And the way I was getting every single bottle is I was using two hands because, like we mentioned in the preview, that's something I was extremely nervous about. Because I had heard, kind of like horror stories of people missing bottles and bonking. And so I was using two hands each time. And looking back, I think that my bottles had too much water in them because I started to get really full. And I think it was kind of due to, I train at altitude maybe. So I'm used to drinking a lot of water because it's super dry up here. And that day was very wet in Boston. And so it was getting harder to drink. I also was like on my period and like hydration gets a little weird when like I'm on my period. And so there's all these factors where I'm like, all right, this isn't going perfectly to plan, but I was kind of mitigating as I was going on, and I would hold my bottles longer and stuff like that. That's all to say. So I got a little cocky because I had nailed all my bottles, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna one hand this one and kind of like, start pushing us going into the hills. And so it was like the last bottle before Noon Hills. I like go to grab it, and my hand, because it's pretty cold out there, even for me, it just like pushed the bottle off the table instead of grabbing it, and it just flew. And I was like, yeah, that's not worth it, because I didn't want to lose the girls, because we literally were about to like go into the right-hand turn where we were starting the hills. And I was like, I don't want to surge before we start climbing hills. And so it was man down, was that bottle, and I just told myself, don't think about it, just like try to grab some water, some Gatorade. So that happened. And then we were going through the hills, and I honestly felt great. Like, that was probably the best I felt all race. I was helping, like, to push our group up the hills. One girl kind of helped us through the first one. And then Heartbreak, I mean, I felt right at home. It felt so good. And it got to the point, I knew there was kind of like a false summit where I don't even remember where that was. And pretty soon you're at the top and it's a huge party. Everyone's just screaming their face off, like, you're almost at the top, you're almost at the top. And there's a banner that says, welcome to the top of Heartbreak Hill. And again, this is where my kind of pessimism from trail running experience. I've seen signs like that before, and there's still like a mile to go in some of these European races. And so I was like, I don't know if that's actually the top. I'm just gonna keep, pacing myself as if there's 0.3 to go. But sure enough, that was perfectly placed, and that was the actual top of the hill. And it was a pleasant experience because I was feeling really good, and I was like, all right, now it's the downhill. Like, we got this, we're still on pace. And so now we started the transition.
All right, so you start the transition. My good friend and someone that you know well, Stephanie Flippin, was at mile 22. And actually, she sent me a text as you went by
Oh,
because
cool.
she knows that we're having this conversation. Again, she's a good friend of mine. So talk to me about that transition from climbing super well in a spot where a lot of people have suffered, usually more amateurs than pros. Pros can manage that experience maybe a little differently than us mere mortals. But as you're, again, eclipsing Heartbreak Hill and going down, I know the last 5K or so didn't go quite the way you wanted. So can you just let me know like how things started to percolate within your body that kind of maybe set the stage for how the end turned out?
Yeah, so of the three women that we were with, or I was with, of our group, so I was one of three, one of them just shot off like a rocket. And her name is Savannah Berry, I'm pretty sure, and I think that was a PR for her. But she just looked phenomenal. Like, she was in a different space than me, where I was like, I'm not gonna be able to go with her, like, because we transitioned, and I had After studying the course, the time that you get on the Newton Hills, I kept telling myself, okay, you need to transition to like make that time up and to like start to gain that momentum. And so I think my next mile was like f between 5:42 and 5:45, which is about what I was thinking. And I ran it, and immediately it's like, I can run 5:45s downhill all day. I've been able to, run similarly on very technical terrain from trail running. And I like started to do it. I got through that mile, and I was like, huh, my body isn't feeling great. And I had one more bottle, and I grabbed it. But again, just like had trouble eating but or drinking the whole thing. I just felt, even after missing the bottle, I was surprised because I thought I was just gonna down that. And so I hit the 5:45. So I think that's at mile 22, and then I was the body started just going, like no energy. I kept asking myself, I'm like, is this 26 miles or 26.3? Because then the next mile was, I think, like 6:12. But again, I had so much of a buffer at that point that I was like, okay, Danny, just hold this. You just don't slow down. You don't need to pick it up. Just hold this and you'll make it. And yeah, things just started going sideways. Like my I just had no yeah, I just had no energy at all. And it wasn't like a feeling that I didn't have enough water. I just don't think I had enough calories by that point. Because I went into a bonk. That's essentially what it was. And I remember trying to just push myself so hard that I felt myself starting to run diagonal, like almost into the fence, because I was just trying to dig incredibly hard. And the girl, the third of our group, she caught me, probably, after that slower mile. She's like, come on, let's go, let's go. And I was like, just keep kicking ass. Like, I just don't know if I'm gonna catch you right now. And she was incredibly smooth the rest of the way. But yeah, that's pretty much how it went. It was a very deep, difficult bonk, and I looked at my watch again, and it was, I think the next one was like 6:40, and I was like still trying to make deals with some higher power, being like, just give me another 6:20 and we could still do this. But at that point too, I was like, I don't even know if my watch, like, what if 6:20 would get me there, because then we still had another 0.2, 0.3, 0.4, depending on like the tangents and stuff like that. But yeah, it was like, in the moment, I pushed myself as hard as I could without falling over, because at that point I had known that the time was, gone. It was done and gone at that point. And so I was like, I just need to cross this line so I can finish my debut marathon. And even despite feeling like my emotions and brain were in another world when I turned down onto Boylston Street. That was incredible. Just like the crowds, and you could see the sea of people, and you could see the finish line, and something that personally I've seen on many TV screens and photos. So that was a really cool moment. And then as soon as I crossed the finish line, I felt like I was going to fall over, and luckily someone caught me.
Good job, volunteers. Good
yeah.
catch. Had you felt that kind of bonk before in other races or other training runs?
I had felt it once in a trail run, and it was because I was dehydrated and probably hadn't eaten enough also. But this one was interesting in that I could still kind of run a little bit, I guess. Yeah, it was a pretty deep bonk. I would say it was probably tied for the top worst bonk of my life, with another race that I could think of. Yeah.
So obviously there's a lot of positives that you mentioned in this run. There's so many positive things that you mentioned, right? Over and over again. I know you're a positive person by nature, but at the same time, again, a lot of this went very, very well for you. So now that you've had time and space to consider the race and all the implications of it and how you did, what are some of the major takeaways for you?
I think I'm just, you know, it's nice to laugh at yourself. But also I'm just like really proud that I got to the start line. I was talking to my coach just about, there was probably three or four times during this training block where I was like, it would be totally fine if I just gave up. People would really understand considering everything that I was dealing with and managing. And, I felt like I was constantly up against something. And it felt like a training block where I chose Boston for a reason. I chose that challenge. I wanted to be in a race with many of the best road marathoners ever. And so I'm just proud that I chose to kind of, you know, embrace that challenge versus, you know, choosing a different race. And yeah, I mean, in the end, it literally, if you look at my splits, it's like the last 2.5 miles where I lost it. And so for my first one with those conditions, the buildup that I had, I would say that was still a success. And I've had a lot of messages of people being like, you should have just ran somewhere else. You probably would have gotten it. But I don't know. I think it's more fun when you kind of have to it's fun to knock it out of the park the first time, but I think there's a lot more to be gained and learned as a person when you have to like really work at something. So yeah, and you know, it's something where too, maybe I still believe I'm in that shape. And so, you know, maybe if the race was a week later, I would have gotten it, with, you know, different weather conditions. You just never know what you're going to get the day of until you're racing.
Yeah, and you were very, very close to getting the qualifying time in the half marathon, which we talked about
you know,
just last week. It's not like you were incredibly close even then. So obviously from a fitness perspective, there's while you may not have been in peak form, like you mentioned earlier, I guess that's like a silver lining in of itself, that you were really close even though you weren't like throwing down your A game.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I got everything I could out of myself that day. I can honestly say that I have no regrets. And I held on to the pace as much as I could. And I felt that, you know, like tactically, I did really well for my first one, just staying with the pacing, even with the rain and the headwind and stuff like that. But I will say, as soon as I finished, as much pain as I was in, I was like, I need to do another one of these. I need to do another road marathon. Its challenge is so different from trail, in my opinion. And I hope that, you know, I already had a respect for road marathoning, but it's like even more tenfold now. And I hope that me choosing to, you know, be vulnerable in a way for being where I am as a mountain runner inspires like road runners to try trails, because I want them to see like how our races are different too, and that they can learn to love our challenge as well.
Very well said. And I'd love to explain, love for you to explore more of this in terms of like the bug that you caught and why.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't think it's just specific to Boston. I'm sure it's with every marathon, but there's a certain, it's a different type of tenacity that I was curious about. Again, with, with trail running, the pace changes are so extreme, whereas with road, you really have to be attentive in a different way. With trail, you have to be attentive to your footing, in my opinion. And you have to be attentive to the grade and like your how much of your calves and your hamstrings and stuff like that you're engaging, and that you don't just fall on your face. Whereas remote road marathoning, like I was really attentive to that pace, and you're highly engaged the entire time. So yeah, and the details, the finer details are quite different. The problem-solving skills that you need to have. I feel that personally, I used every tip and trick that I've learned from trail running, and I feel that's why I was able to get so close, regardless of how I was showing up to the line with fueling and water. And even so, I still balked. But on the flip side, I think if a road marathoner did something like OCC and they applied all their tips and tricks, they might also experience the same thing where they bonk. And so
I
the
mean, we see that all the
physiology,
time, right? We
yeah,
see, again, like
totally.
we see road runners enter trail races all the time and have learning experiences,
Yeah.
along the way.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's good to mix it up. I think it makes us all well-rounded, and it's good to it's a really good way to build empathy, for other types of athletes in the running community.
So, but what does that mean for, your spring and summer, right? So now
Yeah.
you have two loves? I don't know. What are we gonna do?
Yeah. Well, Nike was so she was so extremely sweet and kind to me. She was like, my first marathon was, like 2:40 or something like that. And she's like, look at what I'm doing. I was like, that's very kind of you to say. But yeah, I'd like to think that I could take some time off. So going to look at, attempting something after the trail season, because now my season's really gonna pick up quite soon. For those that don't know, the mountain season pretty much starts this weekend with a Madeira Ultra Trail in Madeira, Portugal, which is an island. And the alpine season, as you can imagine, it correlates with snow melt, and so that season starts in June. So I'll be going over to Chamonix for the Mont Blanc Marathon, which is a race that I did last year. I'll be doing some training for OCC while I'm there, and then I'll do another race in Switzerland, come home, and then fully focus on OCC, which is the 55K race during UTMB week. And then after that, it's kind of TBD, but I'm kind of thinking CIM is like a Hail Mary at the end of the year. I've heard a lot of great things about that race. The packs are bigger, the course is different from Boston. So yeah, and if we could fit a half in there, it would be nice, but the priority definitely is my trail stuff right now. 'Cause
Kind of
yeah,
like a
like you
early
said,
no like an early November half or something.
because I actually think that transitions a little bit better from the trails, 'cause from trails you get a lot of speed. So we'll see. We'll kind of see how it unfolds.
And even if it's close to the race, I mean, I was again just on the phone with Nell, and like this year and 2 years ago, she did Cherry Blossom 10 miler, which is the USATF 10 miler, 2 weeks out. And for her, that's like a really good timing. Again, everyone's
Yeah.
different. I know, but like she was there, Sarah Hall was there, a bunch of people who would potentially run Boston. And yeah, it is interesting, especially someone of your caliber, where like a half marathon, while obviously extremely difficult, isn't going to be an incredibly long effort. It's something you could probably recover from relatively quickly.
Totally. Yeah. And that was something I was talking to my coach about as well, because it's something I could fit in, for example, before OCC, and I don't hesitate that it would, what's it called, take much from that training, which would be really nice. But I need to do a little bit more research. I know marathons, but I don't know halves like the back of my hand.
Yeah. Interesting. Danny, thank you so much for sharing all this information. It has been a pleasure following you, and I'm so excited to dive into mountain and alpine racing as we get into it, and then, have someone to talk to about UTMB week. who's actually going to be a part of it. This is not something that I'd like to do. That's something I do very often on the show. However, I am a big fan of it. I follow it personally. I'm part of Free Trail, and I like, and, you know, I'm involved in all that information. And even my running coach is David Roche. So he's you know, ingrained in all of this stuff. So I basically just, like, I don't even care what he says about my own experience. I just like ask him all trail and ultra questions, even though I don't really run either of them. But yeah. All of that being said, Danny, thank you so much for coming on. You've talked about your podcast in your last episode and in this one. If people haven't checked it out, what is the name of it and what are you up to there?
Yeah, thanks. It's called the SubHub Pod or Podcast. It's under Free Trail. So under that kind of media group there. And we focus on sub ultras in the trail running space, which is basically anything under the 50K distance.
There you go. And y'all are doing great work. It's you and MK Sullivan. Danny, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.